Hello and welcome back to the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show. Today is a deep dives episode. I'm here as always with my co-host Paige Otto. Paige, how are you doing this fine morning?
I'm doing great, Nick. It's basically almost summertime. The lottery is on Sunday. Just got back from Miami. Get to talk hoops with you before the weekend, so couldn't be better.
So for those of you who watched our previous version of this, you and are checking this out on YouTube, not as helpful for the audio people, but you might notice our screen looks a little bit different today, and that's because we are bringing back the deep dive second round mock draft. So people seem to enjoy it a decent amount when we did it last time, so we're giving it another whirl here, and we've got our little No Ceilings mock draft here, little No Ceilings big board mock draft courtesy of our very own Albert Kim. So Paige, I'm excited. That was a really fun time last time around, and we get to give it another whirl.
I know. I'm excited. It's kind of like our thing now, Nick.
Yeah. we've officially co-opted this, and if anyone else at No Ceilings wants to, they're going to have to ask for bargaining rights or something. We're going to have to fight for it if people try and claim it. But
give us like 5 picks or something for this. Their team's picks, actually.
Perfect. So shall we go ahead and jump on in with the start of second round?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So as mentioned before, this is our second round mock draft over here at Deep Dive. So we're going to be doing the first half of the second round today and the second half of the second round at future date. So be on the lookout for that as well. But I started off last time. So Paige, why don't you start us off this time and give us your selection for the Atlanta Hawks with the 31st pick here.
Yes. And before you guys are like, why are some players not available for the second round? Is because we're using the latest No Ceilings big board that just dropped a couple days ago. So for those that are on YouTube, obviously you can see all the names there. So if you're wondering why wasn't so-and-so available on the board, that is why. So we're just going off prospects that are available that weren't 1 through 30. So the Hawks are on the board at 31. And they had a really good playoff run, Nick. Yeah. Obviously, the last game didn't go how anyone expected by losing nearly by 50. But, I mean, they had a chance there for a while. I mean, they got 2 games over the Knicks. But there's also a lot of, you know, holes and gaps with that team as well, too. And then, obviously, Zachary Risichet isn't kind of living up to his projections, right? His playing time is very, very limited. Just doesn't seem the Hawks have, honestly, any faith in him at this point. And if you're looking here on the board, and then CJ, obviously, is going to be an unrestricted free agent this summer as well. So I think kind of playing off, you know, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, one most improved player this year. I mean, he has been phenomenal for them. And I think they're kind of going to build around him and Jalen Johnson. So I'm looking at Tyler Tanner here, Nick, just because I think he is kind of what they need to grow around Naw and Jalen Johnson. And I think he kind of just fits that Hawks mentality a little bit. I mean, he can shoot the 3 ball. Yes, he's an undersized point guard, but he plays above the rim, has great playmaking ability, and is a two-way player, right? I mean, if you're looking at defensive playmaking, he has great hands, love his stock rate as well. So I think he's going to come in and kind of be that, you know, missing piece they kind of need in the backcourt.
Yeah, this will be the first, but it will certainly not be the last time that we say Deep Dives alum, Tyler Tanner. So, you know, someone we've talked about previously. And yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense for Atlanta for all the reasons you laid out. And also just the fact that, you know, he's got some coverage on multiple fronts in terms of, you know, they have Jalen Johnson to run a lot of the offense through him. They've got, you know, defensive help on the back line, maybe not as much as some teams, but certainly enough. And I think you and I would also agree that he might need less insulation in that regard than some people might think, just because, again, you know, he is that sort of productive playmaking defender. And also, you know, as you mentioned, he's an above the rim guy, right? He's enough of an athlete that he can make up for that smaller frame in terms of the athletic tools. So, Yeah, keep the Southern boy in the South, but you know, also I think makes a lot of sense for what Atlanta's got going on at this point. All right, so I am on the board here for the Indiana Pacers at 32, and I'm struggling to not pick the player who is highest on my second round board, you know, the guy who I picked last time around, but I'm not sure that necessarily fits as well with what Indiana needs, just given the depth they have up front and particularly in terms of the forward spots. So I might surprise you by not going with the player who I've all but said I'm about to go with here. And instead, I'm going to go with Ryan Conwell. I think he's someone who, for a team like Indiana, I mean, this past season, in my mind, says absolutely nothing about that team, what they're going to be going forward, you know, essentially as soon as Tyrese Haliburton comes back, right? And for all of the, you know, issues that Indiana had this past season, it's never a bad idea to give this team in particular someone who's an incredibly versatile shooter who, you know, he's not like a primary playmaker type, but if the offense runs through him from time to time, that's perfectly fine. I'm just sort of imagining a world where it's Tyrese at the one, Conwell at the two, Aaron Nesmith at the three, and then Siakam and Zubats up front. That's a team that's got a lot of shooting, a lot of defensive chops. And with Conwell, you know, again, given how awful Indiana was this past season, it isn't really as indicative of the fact that they were a finals team literally last year. Someone like Conwell, I think, makes a lot more sense for a team that's in contention. You know, he did a bang up job when he had to run the Louisville offense when Mikal Brown Jr. was down, and that team did a lot better with Conwell as pretty much the only offense than certainly I would have expected. But I think he would do his best work at the NBA level as someone who can play off a lot of other really talented offensive players, be this, you know, incredible shooting threat that he is in basically any way that you could want a guy to be a shooter, be just a solid stalwart defender. Him being on the older side, I think, is less of a concern for a team like Indiana that is looking to contend right away, which, again, normally when you're up this high in the draft, you're not a team that's going to be in contention the next season. But I think that's definitely the case for Indiana, and bringing in someone like Conwell, I think, really shores up that wing rotation that, you know, it's not like they had bad wings at all this year, but I think they could stand to improve in that area. And I think Conwell makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Conwell perfectly fits that Pacers culture as well. He's just a dog, right? Yeah. I mean, he kind of fits that mentality over there. And you mentioned with Mikal Brown Jr. being out a decent amount, he had to step up, right? And production wise, I mean, it was his fourth school in 4 years, and he was still able to consistently improve. And obviously, we, you know, saw his shot making ability increase, especially from beyond the arc. I mean, in terms of volume too, he's kind of the perfect, you know, two guy that you want next to you, right? Because he can score in so many different ways around the rim as well. But I mean, in those moments too, he showed up again for Louisville hitting clutch shots, and he kind of took over a lot as the one, right, with Mikal Brown Jr. And you can kind of see what else he can do with the ball when the ball's in his hand. So I think him playing off, you know, Tyrese Haliburton, Andrew Nembhard, Ryan Nesmith, and obviously with Benedict Mathurin leaving too, right, there's a lot more chance for him to come in and make an impact right away. So yeah, I completely agree with that pick, Nick.
Solid start. All right, you're up for Brooklyn.
All right. Pick number 33 for the Brooklyn Nets.
I just got to say quickly before you make the pick.
Yeah.
I am surprised that Albert has not coded this mock draft to automatically take the 400th player on the board for the Brooklyn Nets every time they're up. That took a lot of restraint, Albert. Shout out to you. Sorry, go ahead.
Shout out, Albert. All right. So I think here, like, depending on what, so in this simulation, the Nets picked Wagler at 6. So they ended up not getting the top 3 picks. So based off that, because they have Yegor, obviously, if they were to draft Keen Wagler, like the core with Danny Wolf, MPJ. I think center wise, Nick, they haven't really found the perfect center to kind of... So looking at their squad that they have right now, they have obviously Yegor, Danny Wolf, Ben Seraph, MPJ, Claxton, but I think they need more power down low, Nick, just because I don't really know the whole, I don't know what they're doing really at Brooklyn Nets, right? It's kind of like, I think they need how the NBA has kind of trajected in like the past 10 years or so is that when you have a playmaking point big man that you can kind of run through a little bit, a lot more happens for you, a lot more good things happen for you. And they don't have, you know, a star caliber player over in Brooklyn right now. It's kind of a lot of, you know, they're in the rebuilding phase, right? I mean, Yegor has shown some flashes, Danny Wolf and Ben Seraph, but I mean, MPJ is not really a player that you build around, right? So I think looking here,
Yeah, they're tough to figure out just because, again, last year, you know, they drafted basically an entire starting lineup worth of first round picks, right? So it's like they're not giving up on presumably any of those guys. But then the question becomes, you know, where does whoever you're taking end up slotting into that rotation?
Exactly. I mean, they had five guys last year. So, I mean, they're definitely in the rebuilding phase. This draft is kind of a make or break draft for them. This year, I think a lot of eyes are obviously going to be on them for good reason, but I think I'm going to pick Henry. I think he brings size, obviously shooting ability, pick and pop ability, but he can also, you know, defend the rim, and he's a capable mover. I like how he moves laterally as well. And I think, you know, getting him into pick and roll situations with Yegor Demon and playing off MPJ as well, and kind of playing that high and low type of game with him, I think will open up a lot for them. But I could see him, you know, fitting into Brooklyn pretty nicely.
Yeah, I've been, and granted, I don't follow the Nets anywhere near as closely as I used to when I covered them, but I've been surprised for years about how lukewarm they've been on Nick Claxton. And that is not a new thing. And, you know, Noah Clowney emerged somewhat this year, just, you know, in terms of taking a larger share of the minutes, and, you know, Daron Sharp continues to be an incredibly valuable player, but almost exclusively in limited minutes. They're definitely a team that regardless could use additional big man help, but certainly if they're not sure about the futures of any of the three of Clowney, Claxton, or Daron Sharp as, you know, potential centers going forward, there's definitely room on that roster for additional big man help. And certainly with someone like Vesar in the fold who can be a sort of pick and pop threat, you know, space the floor a little bit. Very interesting to see how the big passing stuff would work between him and Danny Wolf. I think that could be a lot of fun. And yeah, I mean, it makes a ton of sense for a team that could use a lot of what he does well. I'm on the board now for the Utah Jazz, and I'm going to skip my usual bit and take the Utah Jazz draft pick seriously. That's a joke for the people who will get that joke, which I don't know how many that is, but certainly a few No Ceilings Plus subscribers will know what that little moment was about. This is another team where the guy who's highest on my board would be someone I would heavily consider for most teams. But Utah is not a team that I think of as struggling with big man depth in any shape, way, shape, or form. So I'm looking further up the positional spectrum here. Yeah, no, it's an odd team to try and draft for here, just given, I mean, honestly, two of the three picks we've made so far would have been key contenders for me to go with this pick. So that,
sorry, Nick.
Yeah, that sucks for me. I mean, what, you know, objectively, half of them are my fault. Yeah. But
the cards that you're dealt.
Yeah, well, the cards that I dealt to myself, which, you know, is a bit of a different issue. Yeah, it's weird because a lot of the guards who last time around were available in this range have now bumped into the first round because of everybody who withdrew. And like, I would have loved to pick Malik Thomas again, but I can't because he was 30th on the board. Man, this is tough. This is tough. I think I'm going to go with Billy Richmond. I know it's a pick you're not going to object to, but you know, in terms of what's on the board for me here, I think what Utah needs is either guard help or help on the wing. And quite frankly, Keyonte George's season makes me think it's more leaning the wing direction in terms of what they need for help. And with Billy Richmond, I mean, he's someone who, you know, yet another Deep Dives alum, someone who can cover a ton of gaps, someone who I'm willing to bet will be a positive defender sooner rather than later at the NBA level. You know, we talk pretty frequently about how almost all, if not literally all, rookies struggle on the defensive end. But Richmond is someone who I put in the, yeah, just off, I'm calling this off the top of my head, the 40 games camp of like the second half of the season. I'm willing to bet he's going to already have morphed into a positive defender, if not earlier. And that's not exactly the expectation for rookies, but it would certainly be huge for Utah to, you know, just have some more help outside of the wing. And when you've got Jaren Jackson Jr. and Lauri Markkanen as your starting four or five, getting help there is not what this team necessarily needs. So sorry to my guy who continues to drop because I refuse to pick him, but I think Utah really needs the help on the wing more. And certainly in terms of defense and athleticism, Billy Richmond can really provide a spark for them.
Yeah, I think Billy is kind of the perfect piece to their puzzle over there out in Utah, because if you mentioned they need help on the wing. Obviously, they have Ace Bailey as well. And Bryce Sensabaugh has had flashes this year for them, Collier. But it starts with Keyonte George, Jaren Jackson, and Lauri Markkanen, right? And if you bring in Billy Richmond, who has that high feel motor, just does everything that you want to do for a wing in terms of what he can provide of, you know, extra possessions, defensive playmaking, that's your guy that you want to play off of and have your, you know, main three guys have him, you know, on the wing as extra scoring threat as well, especially in transition too. He can just do so many things to help your team win games. And that's what Utah kind of needs right now.
All right. Be careful here, Paige. Be careful. Just warning you.
I know, if I make the wrong pick, Nick's going to come for me all the way from California.
Book my flight in the next 30 minutes. The good news is because the Kings are so sparse, their needs are basically everywhere. So it's hard to pick someone who doesn't have anything they need, right?
I think I'm going to Alex Caravan. I think he's just staring me in the face. I think the Kings just that was my dryer, but I think he just fits in really well here. They need shooting.
Yes.
I would say they have a lot of things wrong with the team. Sorry, Nick, but shooting.
No, you're correct.
Of, you know, a proven winner as well. I think he'll provide that veteran leadership as well too, even though he'll be a rookie. I mean, he's won two titles, right? So I think him coming in and the shooting versatility he gives, and he's also a connective piece as well, especially on the defensive end, two-way player, and him playing with DeMar, Zach LaVine, Westbrook as well, I think he would fit in nice. And obviously Clifford has shown flashes too over on the wing side as well. But I think if you bring Caravan in, he's going to at least provide some shooting depth for you.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was the pick for the Kings last time as well. And it just makes so much sense. I mean, they were 30th in...
Could be a sign, Nick.
Yeah. I mean, they were 30th in three-point makes and three-point percentage last year. And as many things as there were that were wrong with the Kings' offense last year, by far the biggest was just the number of times that it would essentially be, you know, someone out on an island trying to make something happen in isolation without any shooters to kick out to. And it was just a clogged mess. And so bringing in someone like Caravan, who, as you mentioned, you know, has that championship pedigree that no one on the Kings really has or has had for quite some time. But also, I mean, his connective passing is going to be huge for this team, who, you know, will see who they end up going with in the first round by the time we hit draft night. But they were a team with Russell Westbrook as really the only point guard, especially after the Schroeder trade. And for all that Russell Westbrook exceeded certainly my expectations last season, he's not exactly a long-term solution at point guard. So getting someone else in the building who can both help with the shooting, be a solid help defender, sort of off-ball defensive kind of piece, and also provide that passing element that they need, I think it's a huge pick for them, and certainly someone who would have a very good chance of being a rotation player for the Kings right away.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the moment where I do the boring thing that I've been trying to do for the last couple picks. I'm going to take my guy Flori Badunga here. This is a Memphis team that, you know, even more pronounced after the Jaren Jackson Jr. trade, that they need help in the front court. And with Flori, who is he not on? That's tragic. He is still in the draft last time I checked. If he withdrew the morning of us recording this, I will be very annoyed. But
let me check real quick.
Anyway, until I'm told that I can't, I will be picking Flori Badunga. I mean, his defensive mobility is a massive, massive asset, and also his finishing around the rim. He showed a lot of playmaking chops that he showed very rare flashes of last year, but had a lot more opportunity to do that, especially given Darren Peterson's health issues and absences. You know, a lot of the time offense was run through Melvin Council and Flori Badunga, and he again actualized a lot of the flashes that he put together last year in terms of his passing. So I think that, again, the first couple teams that I was selecting for were not teams that were teams that had incredibly deep big man rotations. I was basically looking for any excuse I could get. And, you know, Memphis is a team that, again, they do need that big man help. I mean, it's Santi Aldama, Zach Edey, Gigi Jackson. You know, Edey is one thing, but neither of the other two guys are anywhere near the kind of mobile defensive threats. And I mean, Badunga almost led the NCAA in shot blocking this year, too. So he's someone who provides a lot of help on both ends of the floor, and particularly in areas that Memphis needs. So I was going to try and find an excuse to pick him basically at any point wherever I could, and I couldn't justify it for the first two teams I had, but I can justify it now. So I'm taking Flori Badunga.
Yeah, I think he must have just not been on the simulator for some reason. But yeah, he's still in the draft. But so just had to do a placeholder there. Yeah. Sorry about that.
I think there was a weird sort of intermediary period after he announced that he was transferring to Louisville, where it was like, is he actually still in the draft? And turns out he is. So I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Shall we take a quick break and move on to the rest of the second round portion we're doing today?
Yeah, let's do it.
That was a mealy mouth transition, as I realized that what I was saying was not actually true, but whatever, it's fine. We move. Here we are. And you are up for the New Orleans Pelicans here with the 37th overall pick.
Interesting. Yeah. The Pelicans, I mean, obviously I think they've hit the nail on the head with Queen and Fears in last year's draft as well. So I think a lot of talks about Murphy kind of moving around this year as well. So I think adding some shooting depth would obviously help them. Obviously Zion, very injury prone. I mean, there's a lot of ways you could go here. Obviously Poole kind of filled some gaps for them, but like, I just don't really trust as a NBA player and kind of building around him. But I mean, Fear, Zion and Queen and Murphy, and obviously Herb Jones too. I think that's kind of the core that they kind of want to not stick together, but I mean, if they can kind of build around those five. So I'm looking at point guard for sure, Nick. I think they need a ball handler to play along with Fears as well, and kind of just being another pass first kind of player for them, just to set up their shooting on the on the arc, obviously Queen has that playmaking too. And I think I'm looking at Braden Smith right here.
Yeah.
I see him in a Pelican jersey as well. And I think bringing in that, that he is a vet. I mean, he's the all-time assist leader in NCAA history. And him kind of bringing that in, playing off Fierce, Queen, and kind of getting a lot more pick and roll time with Zion as well. I think he could fit in there too. And Braden's not the, you know, the best athlete, right? But if you're around, you know, Zion, Fierce that can play above the rim, I think that kind of, you know, helps him out a little bit more. And, you know, he's not the best defensive player, right? I mean, he can hold his own to some sense. I mean, we've mentioned here on Deep Dives that, you know, he does get caught in, you know, screen navigation, kind of get lost in rotation a little bit. And he's undersized too, but I mean, he plays a lot bigger than that. And I think with that type of athletes that he has around him and size, right, too, I think he'll kind of be able to hide a little bit more with the Pelicans than other NBA fits.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's hard to dispute the notion of Braden Smith. I mean, what he does exceptionally well. And not his best year for sure, but certainly between Herb Jones and Trey Murphy III, you've got a lot of length and really mobile defenders who can cover up for maybe a less prominent defensive player, like what we presume Braden Smith will be. So yeah, I think it makes a ton of sense. I mean, he's someone who I genuinely non-ironically thought about for Utah at 34, mm-hmm. which again has nothing to do with anything other than my Utah Jazz bit. So, you know, we'll figure that out. But yeah, I mean, certainly that's a team that can use the playmaking that he provides while also giving him the insulation that he needs. Speaking of teams that have defensive insulation. Yeah, here we are with the Oklahoma City Thunder. And it's slightly less vomit-inducing to be picking for them in the second round as opposed to looking at the fact that they have a larger than 0% chance to get the number one overall pick in the upcoming draft, which is foul. But we don't need to talk about that. And instead, we can talk about the picks for them here. And I think I'm going to go with someone who is slightly lower on my personal board, but checks a lot of the boxes that OKC asks for their players to check. I'm going to go with Allen Grace here. Mm-hmm. And he's someone who, you know, came off the bench for Santa Clara, but was absurdly efficient in basically every area of offense while also providing a ton of defensive playmaking. And, you know, again, I'm slightly lower on him than this on my personal board, but in terms of what the Thunder have shown they value in terms of draft picks, he checks basically every one of their boxes. I mean, he's 6'9", he can move well, plays both ends of the floor, dribble, pass, shoot, all of the things that Oklahoma City has shown they value in recent drafts are things that Allen Grace does. So again, I think it just makes too much sense in terms of the fit here for me to pass up on him, even though I'm slightly lower on him. This is a team that can really bring out the best of what he does and sort of minimize some of the potential concerns with just how absurdly deep their roster is.
Yeah, I mean, every NBA team could use a player like Allen Graves, right? He's a two-way player that can play on and off the ball. He had a 5% steal and 5% block rate this year. And he's also a very, very low mistake player and efficient. And to come in as a freshman and be able to do that with, you know, he didn't start, right? I mean, he kind of came in and still was able to produce in the ways that he did. And we mentioned that, you know, he's looking to shoot the ball when he's in pick and roll situations, right? That was his number one use play type was pick and pop. And he's not, you know, your typical above the rim type athlete, but he's a smart athlete and he's a smart player. And I could see him fitting super nicely with the Thunder in the second round if they were to choose him here.
All right, you're up for the Houston Rockets.
Wow, the Rockets. I mean, they lost in the first round to the Lakers this playoffs, coming in as the favorite as well. Yeah, I mean, Kevin Durant didn't play most of the series, right, too. That could be a whole separate conversation of, you know, KD. And I'm a huge KD fan, but in terms of him being a leader and kind of a winning player and going around to, you know, different teams and wanting to win a championship, that's kind of a whole different conversation with, you know, where he is currently. So, yeah, the Rockets, they – even though they did have a disappointing first round series loss to the Lakers, there's still a lot to like about this team. Obviously with Amen Thompson, Fred VanVleet's going to be back after missing this year, this whole year. Josh Okogie, obviously Reed Shepard, Tari Eason. But I think I'm going to, Dylan Mitchell for the Rockets. I think he kind of brings this grit and motor, and he's able to improve year after year, right? I mean, we mentioned Nick that coming into his freshman year as well, we were high on him, and then he kind of, you know, lulled out a little bit, then came back up because he showed other qualities that we didn't think he kind of had through his game, whether that's shooting the rock, being a connective playmaker. We know he's gonna jump out of the gym, right, with his type of athleticism and his defensive playmaking as well. But he gives that length and size for the Rockets on the wing too. And he's kind of that connective piece to play with, you know, Tari Eason, Fred VanVleet, Amen Thompson, Reed Shepard, and obviously Alperen Sengun as well too, right? I mean, I could just see Sengun dishing off passes to a cutting Mitchell for an easy bucket here and there too. And when you bring Fred VanVleet to a lot, spacing wise, is going to open up a lot for the Rockets too. And I think Mitchell is kind of that perfect plug-in play piece. I don't know if he'll play, you know, right away, but, you know, he's good, great depth off the bench for them.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in terms of just bringing in a hyper athlete who can throw down any lob that's thrown within like 30 feet of his vicinity there. And, you know, additionally, I mean, the defense was, let's just say, inconsistent for the Rockets, but certainly someone like Mitchell, who's, you know, as active and athletic as he is, who also gets in passing lanes, who's a really great weak side shot blocker. I can speak English. There's a lot to like in terms of what he could bring to the Rockets. I am sorry, who's on the board? It's the Celtics, right? On the board for
yes.
me?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised, honestly, that you took Dylan Mitchell over the guy who I'm going to take here. I'm taking Zubi Ejiofor.
Yeah.
And it's a similar notion, right? You know, played for the the same team, right? But, you know, the idea for me behind Ejiofor versus Mitchell is, I mean, first of all, Ejiofor's a little bit bigger, which, you know, is helpful on the margin. I'm not calling him, you know, this sort of wild shooter, but there's more in my mind to buy into his potential to stretch the floor as opposed to Mitchell, who really doesn't even try all that much from out there. And with Ejiofor, I mean, he is a really, really strong connective playmaker for big man in a way that I think can create a lot of other openings for the Celtics around him. So it's the kind of thing where I think he's also someone who's going to be able to play sooner rather than later, which for a team like the Celtics that even in their quote unquote gap year, you know, were a top seed in the Eastern Conference who almost made it out of the first round, getting someone like Ejiofor who can fill in a lot of the gaps, be this incredible connective playmaker while also being a severe shot blocking threat, I think he can help fill a lot of gaps for the Celtics squad.
Yeah, and with him kind of being on the wing too, he kind of is your typical positionalist basketball type of player, right? I mean, he can do so many things. Well, I wouldn't say he's mastered, you know, his perimeter shot quite yet, but he sure has mastered getting to the rim in any stretch of the imagination. He got to the rim almost 7 times per game at a 72% clip as well. So you're bringing in this guy that, you know, can take advantage of mismatches, bully them in the post, and obviously get to the line downhill and kind of be a lot more crafty that way too. And, you know, if you have that kind of player that's playing off Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, and able to, you know, kick out to those types of players, yeah, I think it's a great pick.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break, and then we're going to close out the first half of the second round here. All right, five more picks here on today's episode for the first half of the second round. As mentioned up top, we will close out the second round for our next episode. But Paige, you are on the clock here at number 41 for the Miami Heat. What are you thinking here?
Yeah, the Heat, I feel like you could go a lot of different ways here, Nick. I mean, they haven't, right now, I don't really know what they're going towards. I mean, they have a lot of players that work well together. I've always been a big fan of Norman Powell. And obviously, Bam Adebayo, Jaime Jaquez, Pel Larson, Davion Mitchell. But Tyler Herro, there's kind of some questions around if he's like staying. Pistons is kind of a destination for him. He did change his profile picture to that. So, I mean, there's kind of a lot of circulating what is kind of happening down there in Miami. But I think for this to kind of all work together, they need a point guard. Right. So if I'm looking at all these players on here, obviously I'm going to go Jaden. He fits that Miami Heat culture down there. He's proven that he's a proven winner. I mean, coming into Arizona too, playing off Braden Burry's Koa Pete, he knows how to play with type of play on and off the ball as well. Right. So if you're giving it to Norman Powell, Tyler Herro, he is a great playmaker in that way. And he can also shoot decently, but I think him just being able that primary ball handler, that he needs someone to take care of the ball for them. And I think Bradley coming in right away, he can certainly do that and let, you know, the capabilities of Tyler Herro, Bam Adebayo, Powell kind of take over for him, and him playing off Davion Mitchell too. I think they have a good kind of starting line, but obviously Miami Heat, they do need that superstar player down there. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what trades and moves they kind of make this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to think of a more Heat culture player that was available on the board at this point in the draft than Jaden Bradley. So even if they didn't need a point guard, it would be a pick that would make a ton of sense for them. But especially since they do, yeah, that's an easy money call.
All right, Nick, you're up. Nets
on the board for the Brooklyn Nets here at number 42. I'm just going to go for it and go with one of my guys here. And I'm going to take Otega Owe for Brooklyn. He's someone who I've been a big believer in his defensive chops for a while, but this past season in what was really a pretty fraught and lost year for the Kentucky Wildcats, he was often the only bright spot on the court. And, you know, he showed a lot in terms of his improved playmaking. He's always been an absolute menace defensively in terms of getting in passing lanes, in terms of walling guys up. I mean, he's 6'4", but he is stocky. He's listed at 215, and I buy every single pound of that 215. He's someone who is not going to be very easily moved defensively at the next level. And, you know, again, he's not a point guard by any stretch of the imagination, but him expanding his playmaking this past year, him being more willing to take and make threes than he had been in previous years, you know, his percentage went down a bit, but the volume went up quite a bit in a way that was really encouraging in my mind in terms of his sort of future projection as a potential floor spacer. I think he's one of the better 3-and-D bets that you're going to find in the second round. And for a team like Brooklyn that's still sort of looking to figure out who their offensive engine is, having someone who's a plug-and-play guy who can help out on both ends of the floor is big for them. And so I'm picking Owe a lot higher than I did last time, and that's almost entirely because of the number of players that have withdrawn. I picked him lower on my board last time than I had him. Even still, this time I'm picking him lower than where he's at on my board. But at this point, I think he just makes too much sense for Brooklyn for me to pass him up here.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense, especially with so many players that we've had higher on our boards or in recent mock drafts that, you know, kind of fell out. And Owe has reaped the benefit of that, too. Obviously, Kentucky had pretty disappointing year, but for Owe, he kind of found his groove a lot more in those up and downs, too. And obviously, with the Nets, he's not going to be asked to have such a high offensive usage that he had. I mean, he was the key offensively for the Wildcats this season, and obviously show that when he gets hot, it's hard to stop him as well too. But I mean, I like his two-way versatility. He's like a fire hydrant trying to knock off his spots, and I think he would fit in super nicely here playing with Danny Wolf, Yegor as well. I think he's kind of that perfect connecting piece for them.
Miami again.
I know. Basically back to back. Let's see. Interesting. I mean, so many players have elected to go back to school.
Yeah. It's a bit thinner of a roster than last time we were making these selections.
Yeah. I'm going to pick Ruben Chinyulu for the Miami Heat. I think aside from his outstanding absurd rebounding capabilities, he also brings that size and motor, and I think Eric Spoelstra would definitely see the value in him as well. Obviously, he's more of, you know, old school type of big man, just playing around the basket a lot more, but you have Bam Adebayo that can play all five positions playing with you. So I think playing with Bam, Powell, Hero as well, I think he could fit in pretty nicely for them, and being a shot blocker as well, and he brings that size to them as well, at, you know, being seven foot and up. So I think him and Bam could play super well together, so I think it makes sense at this point in the draft.
Yeah, plus might as well keep him in Florida, right?
Yeah, right, he doesn't have to move that much, so
there you go. Alrighty, now I'm on the board for the Sacramento Kings, so this time I have only myself to blame. This is interesting because there is one name that very much stands out to me, but also given that they've already taken Alex Caraban, I'm not as dialed in on this absolutely has to be a shooter, given that they just took Caraban. Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to mix it up and go with Kadir Copeland here. Again, what I mentioned earlier about them needing a long-term solution at point guard, and you're not picking your long-term solution for any position at 44 in the draft, hopefully, but with Copeland, I mean, he's got size and serious ball handling chops. He's someone who has really been the star of the sort of pre-draft circuit, certainly one of, if not the best players at Portsmouth. And, you know, again, this is a team that needs a lot of help at a lot of different areas, but getting someone with his combination of size and playmaking ability, not to mention what he can chip in on the defensive end in terms of defensive playmaking, he checks a lot of boxes for the Kings. And I'll just say up front that the other player I was considering was Momcilovic, but I don't think they need Milan anywhere near as much, given that we had them take care, well, given that you had them take Caraban at 34. So instead, opting to answer a slightly different set of questions and bring in someone who can at least help fill out that point guard rotation, because for all the positives that Devin Carter showed this past year, I don't think he's a point guard by any stretch. And again, much though Russell Westbrook exceeded many expectations, including mine, he's also 37 and therefore not the long-term answer. I think bringing in someone like Copeland, even if he's sort of a longer-term backup, it'll help shore up that rotation and just get the ball moving more than it was this past season.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, Copeland has definitely been one of those players that has been one of the biggest risers in this pre-draft process, just because so many players, especially wings, have dropped up. So that has kind of allowed him to make some moves, especially here in the second round. So I'm up again, Portland Trail Blazers with the 45th pick.
Last pick for the day.
Yeah, last pick for the day. The Blazers, I think, are going to surprise a lot of people in the next couple years, Nick. Denny Avia is a superstar in the making. Donovan Clingan, Tamani Kamara, Suns legend. And then Scoot, too. I mean, he's really rose to the occasion, especially in the playoffs, and has made people not, you know, forget that he was the number two pick, right? In the 2023 NBA draft, because for a while there, people kind of have written him off, but you know, he's back, especially with his mentality, and he just looks a lot better throughout the season. So I think looking at the Blazers, when Dame's going to come back too.
Yeah, that's the weird thing with this team is they've basically got a starting five of 25 and younger players, which great for them. Makes it hard to draft for them.
Yeah, Chris Murray. I think I am going to do my last year just because I think they do need a little bit more shooting on the wing. And Mylan definitely brings that. He brings length and size as well. And he doesn't, and same thing with, when I took, why am I blanking? Braden Smith, to the Pelicans. It's the same kind of thing here, right? Because even though Mylan Masilovic is 6'8" and above and can hold his ground, he's not the best defender, right? But because he's going to be playing with Shaedon Sharpe, Tumani Kamara, as well on the wing, and Donovan Clingan, right, with the rim presence and production that he has, he's gonna be okay, right? And he's improved playmaking a little bit more. He's not you're above the rim type of athlete too. But if you need someone that's gonna make big shots for you and you know be kind of that movement shooter that can play off Denny Avia, Dame, I think him in Portland makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the main reason that I steered away from him from the Kings' perspective is because they don't have any defensive insulation.
Yeah.
Portland absolutely does. So they can get the best out of him in a way that the Kings can't. And also, unlike the Kings, who were 30th in percentage, but also 30th in attempts, Portland was 28th in three-point percentage, but they were third in terms of three-point attempts. This is not a team that is shy about shooting. And so it'll be even more helpful for them, right? Rather than a team that doesn't shoot all that much, to get a guy who can just come in. And I mean, it's one of those things where, again, there aren't really enough ways to overstate what we talked about on the deep dives episode of literally 100th percentile offense, right? Like better than 50% from 3-point range on a very healthy number of attempts. And, you know, someone who can run off screens, someone who, you know, he's not really a pick and roll ball handler, but he can certainly, if they use him in that way, he could be a pick and pop threat. Obviously, he's a huge threat as a trailer in transition. Really, any kind of three-pointer that you can want a guy to put up, Bilan can and will put up those looks. And so getting him onto a team like Portland that can both insulate him defensively and also is ready, willing, and able to have him out there on the floor as a shooter, makes a ton of sense.
I mean, he kind of can just run rapid over there with the Blazers because of the defensive, you know, players that they already have, right?
Yeah.
His one focus is, you know, you're going to shoot the rock, and with the range you have and, you know, the backup that you have, there's no reason why, you know, he can't be getting up, you know, not as much volume that he did in college. I mean, he was almost at 7-8 attempts per game at a 50% clip, but definitely, you know, he's going to keep shooting the rock, especially with the Blazers. I would think, you know, probably 6 attempts per game. Kind of depends, you know, if he's able to get in right away. But I mean, if your only, you know, capability is to, when you're going on the Blazers, is to, you know, shoot the rock and shoot it as well as Mylan did, he's not going to have to think about anything else. And that's exactly what you kind of want for a player like him in his first year in the league to do.
All right. Anything else before we wrap up part one here?
No, all good.
All right, she is Paige Otto. You can find her on social media at PaigeOtto_, and you can find her written work on NoCeilingsNBA.com. You can find me on social media at NBAJohnson, and you can find my written work on NoCeilingsNBA.com as well. As mentioned throughout the episode, our next show in the books is part two of this second round mock draft, which we are about to record momentarily. So that should be good to go for all of you who want to check that out. If you're enjoying the show on a podcast player, Spotify or otherwise, please be sure to leave a rating and a review in whatever podcast player you might be using. Always much appreciated. If you're checking us out on YouTube, please leave a like on the video and subscribe to the channel. Again, as mentioned, part two will be coming up relatively soon. So if you don't have enough of a fix of second round mock drafts, you'll get part two coming up relatively soon here. But in the meantime, if you are enjoying the deep dives portion of the show or have any feedback on the deep dive specific portion of the show, you can feel free to reach out to us either via the aforementioned social media, or you can shoot me an email, nickaj.nba@gmail.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.